A friend of mine, when I was telling her that I was going to do this show with these amazing women we're having here with Dr. Veronica Garcia and Amber Wallin, told me, a society that doesn't take care of their children and their elders is an uncivilized society. It was shocking when she told me that. What should we do as community, as society, to have in our priorities children well-being?
Well, you know, one of the first things that I think we need to do is make kids a priority in our budgets. And so for so long, we've been focusing on the demands of very high income earners and on those of big businesses. But we believe that children need to be the highest priority in the budget. And that starts from when they're born and goes on through the college age years. So particularly in that area from birth to five, the years that we know are so critical for brain development, we need to fully fund programs like home visiting, pre-kindergarten, and Medicaid, programs that we know work and that are associated with improved health and educational outcomes. We also need to sufficiently fund K-12 education and support community schools and community health centers so kids can go to school ready to learn and then be fully supported as they move on through school. You know, another thing that we always say at New Mexico Voices is that we need to support what are called two-generation policy solutions.
So this means that, two-generation? Which are those generations? And what are you thinking about those generations you want to get involved in these policies?
Sure. Well, you know, research shows that children do better when their families are doing better. And so two-generation solutions help address the needs of kids while also continuing to support families. And, you know, one of the ones that I'd say is a really prominent and a great example of that type of policy solution is child care assistance. And so child care assistance allows low-income working families to be able to afford the enormous cost of child care while continuing to work, support their families. And at the same time, those kids are in safe, supportive, licensed environments that they can grow and learn in.
So, you know, I believe that as a nation, we have a history of not valuing children. You know, it's not too long ago that we had to look at child labor laws, right? And, you know, as we look at those that work with children, like teachers are typically not paid the kind of salary that they should. Even pediatricians make less money than, say, other doctors, right?
Well, so it's somehow this question was told, this comment was told by a pediatrician.
Well, there you go. So, you know, it is, you know, it just, as a society, we have to put our money where our mouth is in terms of valuing children and recognizing that they are our future. And we have an opportunity in New Mexico. You know, we can say gas and oil revenue, you know, is down. The economy, you know, people don't want to raise taxes. You know, taxes, you know, having taxes seems to have been become a bad word. Government is a bad word. Yet the government needs to be there to address the needs of its society. And so we have an opportunity. New Mexico is sitting on one of the largest land-grant permanent funds, not only in the country, but in the world. And we have an opportunity to take bold action, to take a very small fraction of that fund to invest in early childhood education, to invest in the programs that Amber was speaking about, home visitation, quality child care, and pre-K. It won't cover all of the need. It probably, the revenue estimates are being between $125 and $150 million a year, but it will go a long way into not losing another generation of children, because every year that these kids don't get a good start and come to school several years behind developmentally, they never really catch up. They're not reading by third grade. If they're not reading by third grade, they're most likely not to graduate from high school. They're more likely to be incarcerated. They're more likely to have health issues. They're more likely to be teen parents. And the cycle of poverty continues. So we have an opportunity to intervene. And polls that have been conducted show that New Mexicans support doing it. The problem is getting the legislature to pass this ballot initiative that would then go to voters and let New Mexicans decide. It is our money, and we are stewards of those dollars, and we should have the opportunity to have this broader public policy debate and to vote it up or down. But I think we need to take it to the voters. And it's something that I hope that in the next legislative session we can make happen.
And so you are focusing particularly the first and early childhood as a priority to say if those were would be the steps of action, that will be the first step, as I can understand from you. What will be the second one?
Well, I think when Amber was talking about two-generation approaches, I think that that is key. For example, and I've got to look at my notes here very quickly.
Yes, absolutely.
But as we look at family and community, parents without a high school diploma, we got worse. We're 17% now of parents without a high school diploma. We also know that the educational attainment levels of children are more closely correlated to the educational attainment level primarily of the mother but of their parents. So we need more adult basic ed. We need more career pathways. We need more work supports. And you might want to talk a little bit about that, Amber.
You know, I think Veronica's hitting the nail on the head with that. You know, it's very important that when we're seeing so many families struggling, it's not surprising that so many kids are struggling. And so many families are just really facing dire economic straits in our state. And while the rest of the country has continued to see economic recovery after the recession, New Mexico's economic recovery has really flatlined. And we see that reflected in the economic well-being of our families and kids. And so 42% of our working families are still considered low income. And so, again, just as our state can't thrive when so many of our families are really stuck and struggling, kids in those families are going to have that much of a harder time succeeding as well. And so addressing the needs of families and of parents to rise out of poverty and helping support them while they improve their family's economic well-being, that's another really important key to helping children in those families.
You know, one thing you touched on earlier was hunger. And we're third in, you know, in child hunger in the nation. And
that's a shame.
And one of the pieces of, you know, advocacy work, and Amber worked on this and did some research on it, was the work requirement for SNAPs. Some people know it as food stamps, Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. And, you know, I wrote an opinion piece about that, and it's not that we're against a work requirement per se, but when there aren't any jobs and we're requiring parents to go out and work or to volunteer, and yet, you know, the majority of the parents that are receiving SNAP families are working. It's really about 25%, 23%. But yet, who suffers? It's going to be the children. And so I think that we need to really hold government accountable to some of these policies, to look at them through the lens of how is this going to impact children who really, they can't go out and work. They can't advocate for themselves. They don't have a voice. And so looking at it from the lens of its impact on children is really key.
Can we say in some ways, I was reading that we are also in this month in the international awareness about abuse and neglect of childhood. I know we go, that's a big word, but when we are neglecting our own children, are we also saying that we are a society that neglects children? Is part of a kind of abuse we are doing about our children without taking care of them?
Well, you know, one of the things that we have to give credit to the legislature for really trying to focus on improving child abuse in New Mexico and trying to focus on kids. But in our opinion, when you're facing a crisis that New Mexico is facing in childhood well-being, we really have to take bold action. So the incremental improvements that we've been seeing in public policy over the years, it's not that people don't believe in it and people don't agree.
Or we don't appreciate it.
Don't appreciate it, because legislators, you know, a number of them in particular have really committed to this cause. But with such a major problem, you have to have really big solutions to address those issues with childhood poverty, child well-being, and child abuse in our state.
Well, think about the national elections, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you're your listeners, just as we are, in all the debates and all the town halls, it seems like there isn't one week that goes by that there isn't either a debate or a town hall with the presidential candidates. You tell me how many times children, education, child well-being, child health has ever come up in the conversation, about as close as it's gotten, as I've heard some comments about Common Core and eliminating the education department, and even the health department. Yeah. So you tell me, where is that priority of discussing this as an issue? Because really, it's a national security issue. It is an economic issue. There is a mission ready, I believe, and what is it? Fight crime. I forget how what the title of it is. It's support kids, fight crime, or something like that. But and I'm not doing it justice. But it's retired police that recognize that investing in early childhood can have an impact on crime. I think it's fight crime, invest in kids. Mission ready also is looking at that we cannot have a strong military if we don't have strong graduates. And from high school that are prepared to serve in the military. So it is a matter of national defense. It is a matter of our security and well-being to have an educated citizenry, and it starts in childhood.